Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio 99 The Game Morning Show with John and Hugh, watching the two outs bottom of the ninth in Tokyo in the opening game of the regular season of Major League Baseball.
Woohoo, that's a mouthful.
Seattle beating Oakland 9-7. Can the Mariners hold on to become the only unbeaten team in the majors? Braves season opens a week from tomorrow in Philadelphia. Our buddy Chip Carey going to be on the call, and of course we get ready for the Bravos to play real baseball, which will be a lot more entertaining, because Chip, at this point of spring training, it's like, okay, can we move along here?
Yeah, well, we haven't even started at Fox yet, so we're kind of excited to get started, as you said, on Friday. But yeah, for the players, I'm sure they're ready to go. As we know, spring training is all about the pitchers getting their arms stretched out and all that stuff. So hopefully everybody will be ready and rock and roll. And as you said, against the Phillies, what a night that's going to be, with Bryce Harper debuting in Philadelphia on opening day. Should be interesting, to say the least, at the bank vault.
So, Chip, how do you feel about opening day for Major League Baseball being in Tokyo, Japan? Because me and John were kind of chopping it up this morning, and he's feeling some kind of way about it. How do you feel?
Should be Cincinnati.
Well, yeah, it should be Cincinnati, but that's, you know, gone the way of the dodo. Actually, I've been a part of that series. When I was with the Cubs, we went over there and opened in Japan against the Mets. And let me tell you, it's a blast. It's a fantastic trip. It is awesome. It is great. I think that's one of the great things that Major League Baseball is doing, is promoting the internationalization of our national pastime. You think of all the great players who've come from Japan and Korea and the Caribbean. Who knows, there's guys from Europe that are going to be playing in Major League Baseball. We've got players who were born in Africa making the major leagues and minor league rosters. So anything that promotes the brand internationally, we've got the games in London with the Yankees and Red Sox later this year. I'm all in favor of it. It doesn't bother me a bit. I'm just not going to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch it.
Yeah, there you
see,
go.
That's the way. He couldn't have said it any better. Now, Chip, we've been talking a lot about this bullpen and this starting pitching for the Atlanta Braves this year. And my question to you is this. I know we're depending a lot on these young arms, but what have you seen with the new pitching coach, Rick Kranitz? How have these kids come along so far?
Well, I've not seen Rick. I've not been down at spring training. I don't live in Orlando anymore, so I will be down there tomorrow and Friday. Obviously, the biggest concern that I've seen from afar is the guys are banged up. The Braves aren't going to have their envisioned bullpen together for the first several days of the season. So some guys are going to have to step up in maybe unfamiliar roles and pitch in critical, meaningful innings, perhaps earlier than anybody would have intended. But yeah, that's a double-edged sword. The Braves have talked a lot about how they love their young pitching, their young talent. And while, sure, you love to have that dude at the end of the game, a la Craig Kimbrell, or you'd like to have that guy at the top of your rotation, a la Madison Bumgarner or somebody like that, that's not going to happen, at least in the present, it doesn't appear. And the only way to find out if these kids can do it is to give them opportunities to do it. And the Braves have shown in the past that they're more than happy and willing to do that. In fact, last year, at one point, they fielded five of the six youngest players in the game. So they have young players. They have young talent. They're not afraid to use them. And they're going to be unleashed against the Phillies and Cubs in the first two series, and we'll see what happens.
I'm going to talk with Chip Carey as we get ready for the start of the regular season for the Braves a week from Thursday against the Philadelphia Phillies. And you look out here and see the opening day starter being Julio Teheran again, Chip.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think anybody would have predicted that. Again, Julio didn't start against the Dodgers in the playoffs, but he's come back, apparently worked out hard in the offseason. He's bigger, he's stronger, he's throwing harder. He's had good luck against the Phillies, historically speaking, so he's the veteran guy on the staff with Kevin Gausman banged up, with Foltynewicz banged up, so it's a logical choice. We'll see what he does, and if he can control Bryce Harper in that first game, who will, I'm sure, have a whole bunch of butterflies, I like Julio's chances just as much as anybody else on the staff.
Is this a make-or-break year for Julio Teheran?
Well, I don't know about that. I think it's the last year of his contract in Atlanta with all the young, inexpensive starters that the Braves have. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what Atlanta does with him. Julio's been a mainstay. He's still very young. And in this day and age, let's not forget one critical thing that Julio Teheran will give you, and that's innings and starts. In this day and age where guys are pitching five, six innings, not every one of them can go 31 or 32 times to the post. Julio's done that by and large throughout his whole career. And There have been flashes of brilliance for Julio. There have been perplexing, head-scratching outings as well, especially at SunTrust Park. So we'll see which Julio appears. It'll be a big year for him in Atlanta, I would say. But as far as make or break is concerned, you know, guys that can pitch 200 innings and make 30 starts are going to be very, very valuable for someone, and we'll see if it's Atlanta or someone else.
Well, let's take this outside the Atlanta Braves a little bit. Yesterday, Chip, Mike Trout got $430 million. $430 million. Who do you see in your mind is the next guy up to make that be the first billion-dollar player in baseball?
Well,
half a billion.
Half a billion? Well, yeah. You know, Alex Rodriguez made $500 million. It took him 2 contracts to do that. I read an article yesterday where from Jonah Carey, who's a guy I respect very much in baseball, and he said as far as wins above replacement, Mike Trout's still underpaid. I know that's hard for a lot of people to believe, but I tend to look at players within the prism of not being athletes but as entertainers. And when you look at what Mike Trout brings, 5-tool player, the 6-tool being incredible marketability and accessibility and one of the game's great people, you could make the case that no matter what his salary is, it's probably not enough. And I know fans don't like to hear this when they say, oh, they're playing a kid's game and getting paid tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. But these guys have a finite amount of time to be able to make what they can make. Their bodies do break down, and Father Time, as you know, Hugh catches up to them in the sporting world. And they got to go become radio hosts or play golf. I was looking at some salaries of other entertainers last year, and Oprah made $82 million last year and makes it every year and can make it until she's 80 and nobody bats an eye. So I tend to look at these guys within the prism of entertainers, not athletes. They're entertainers who are great physical specimens. And as far as what they make and how they make it, God bless them. I hope they make I hope they keep making more, because that means the industry overall is healthy and people want to watch them, and that's good for all of us.
Last time I checked, Hugh and Chip, I don't think Oprah was responsible for the Angels not making the playoffs.
That's where you're going, with that.
I guess. Let me ask you. I will say that I agree. Go get your money, and at the same time, they paid the Angels paid Pujols a boatload back in the day when that was a boatload. Now they paid Trout. I mean, do you see return on your investment in terms of, okay, you know, box office is one thing, but standings are another.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate question. Obviously, I would assume that Mike Trout is not going to sign that deal if he doesn't think the Angels have a chance to get to the playoffs sooner rather than later. Again, I was watching MLB Network last year, and Billy Epler, the general manager, took over that franchise. The Angels were dead last in farm system rankings for like 3 out of 4 years, and they've now moved to 12th. So they have young players on their way up. You still have Albert Pujols, who's productive. You still have Andrelton Simmons. Now you've got Mike Trout. That's a pretty nice core to build around, assuming, of course, Pujols can stay healthy. But, you know, that's the nature of this business. These guys that own teams are really, really, really smart. The people that they hire are really, really smart. And I cannot believe that an owner is going to sign one of these players to one of these gigantic contracts if they didn't believe sincerely that there was going to be a return on the investment. And obviously, in the case of the Angels, Artie Moreno, who is one of the smartest owners around and a self-made man, feels that Mike Trout's worth the money. And time will tell if it is and whether he gets into postseason play.
Talking with Chip Carey. Chip, I guess I must be in Braves mode, because if I'm an owner, and I agree, Artie Moreno's a smart guy. He changed the name of the team from Anaheim to Los Angeles and made $200 million overnight. I just don't understand it, though. I mean, position players, seems to me that you go back to the 90s, what you want to do is spend all your money on getting starters, and then you could write, because how many different position players did the big three go through, and you won title after title after title? If you got the starters, you win.
That's always been the Braves' mantra, pitching and defense first. In the case of the Angels, they've had some bad luck. A lot of their guys they've had have gotten hurt. Andrew Haney, for example, a guy that they acquired in trade, he's having elbow problems. So some of that is just dumb luck or bad luck. Where my money, and Lord knows I wish I had $2 or $3 billion to spread around and buy great players like Mike Trout. That's the route I would use, pitching and defense first. They've got part of the defense settled, as we know, with Andrelton Simmons, the former Brave. But, again, they must feel that Mike Trout and company is, who can argue with it, is a great piece to build around, and they can go out and get pitching and spend even more money. We'll see. Also, they're trying to get a new stadium and then move to Long Beach in the next 5 or 10 years. So interesting times to be an Angels fan, to be sure.
All right, I want to go back to the Braves here, because this is a conversation Hugh and I were having earlier about, you know, the things that need to go right this year for the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
Last year, we saw the maturation of Dansby and Ozzie. We saw the emergence of Acuna. This year has got to be back to the starting pitchers. Do you get a sense, Chip, that as you see the maturation of Newcomb and the emergence of Wright and Tukey and Freed, do you get a sense that that's the next big wave, that these pitchers are the big wave, is finally starting to crest?
Yes, I do. You know, John Coppolella and John Hart, who were reviled for the way that they left the organization, have to be praised for what they did for the organization. And that is, they made those tough trades and they helped acquire all of these pitching prospects. And what Coppolella said at the time is, we don't envision one or two guys coming. We envision exactly, John, what you said, wave after wave of prospects coming, and those waves are beginning to crash on the shore, and that's good. Yes, pitching is going to be the key for this team. Health is going to be a key for this team. You know, first couple of weeks of the season, you can pitch around guys with sore shoulders and skip spots in rotation and plug and play here because you have the off days and the travel days because of the weather concerns that you have in March and April on the schedule. But health and maturation are going to be the two huge steps. Mike Foltynewicz took a gigantic step forward and made the All-Star team. Sean Newcomb is certainly capable of doing that as well. Big key for Sean, he's got to throw strike one. He hasn't done that a lot this spring. That is concerning. When he doesn't throw strike one, he gets in trouble and pitch counts go up and he gets hit and he starts walking people. As you mentioned, Julio Teheran. I don't know that Julio is a staff ace, but he's a guy that can give you innings. You got to get Kevin Gausman right. He's had shoulder problems this spring. So a lot of that burden is going to fall on these young guys who, for all of their talents, haven't done it before. And as I said earlier, the only way to find out if they can do it is to give them a chance. You just hope that they are up to the challenge. I know they're not going to be afraid. And, you know, at the end of the day, talent is going to win out no matter what happens. And the age-old adage, the only way to get experience is to get it. And certainly, as we said, the Braves youngsters are apparently going to have that opportunity in the season's first couple of weeks.
Speaking of that, how much does all of this depend on how well Josh Donaldson comes back? Do we need the old-school MVP Josh Donaldson, or can we just have a little bit of that old-school Josh Donaldson?
Can't hurt. Any amount of that kind of stuff you can get won't hurt. Again, that's a question mark. Can he stay healthy? Will he stay healthy? I think the Braves feel a lot better about their club from a depth standpoint. I think that was exposed in the playoffs against the Dodgers, and Atlanta knew that. Having Camargo playing a super utility role is going to help. You've got Charlie Culberson. For the moment, Adam Duvall's in the mix as far as the outfield is concerned. From what I've read, he hasn't had a particularly good offensive spring. We'll see if he makes the club when we head up to Philadelphia. But yeah, having Josh Donaldson playing defense the way that he can play it, hitting in the middle of this lineup in some fashion, either in front of or behind Freddie Freeman, if he can be anything close to an MVP candidate, he does a couple of things. He protects Freeman, and number two, he adds some right-handed batting balance to a predominantly left-handed hitting lineup. So yeah, I'm excited to see Josh play. He brings an edge. He brings an intensity. He's been there before. He's playing for something. He's playing not just for the Braves, but he's playing for a chance to maybe get a big contract himself after this year. So I applaud Alex and the Braves for that move. I think it was a stroke of genius, and we'll hope it all works out.
Well, chop on, Chip, and enjoy Orlando. Let's get this season rolling. I'm anxious. I'm chomping at the bit to get this thing underway because I can't wait to see what we'll see out of Fried and Wright and Acuna, you know, 2.0 and whatnot.
Me too. Should be a lot of fun, a lot of kids, and that's what keeps us young is watching these youngsters get to the big leagues and become big leaguers. So 2018 is in the rearview mirror, and we'll build on that. Look forward to 2019, and we'll get started on Friday, and can't wait to see you guys soon.
Thanks, Chip. Do appreciate it.
Okay. Have a good one.
Be good.
Okay. Chip Carey, Fox Sports, of course, voice of the Braves, talking about this. You know, one of the things I go back to because of this contract that Trout had, Hugh, the $430 million, I was one of the people, and maybe obviously I was wrong, who was kind of banging on the Braves for leaving Ronald Acuna down in the minors so that they would have an extra year of control at the beginning of the season last year and not bringing him up, especially after we saw what happened. But as it turned out, they still won the division even though they did that. And the fact that they kept him down and now have an extra year of control over him for that fifth year was a brilliant stroke because he's going to command $400 million at some point.
Yeah, he could potentially be that guy. He could definitely potentially be that guy. And you see why teams do it. Sometimes it's not right, though. And I always go back to the Ryan Howard, Jim Thome situation when he was in Philadelphia and when they kept him down too long. And even though Ryan, he got his money, but imagine what he could have potentially been if they would have brought him up a little bit earlier.
Right.
So that's what you're kind of weighing it against, John.
It is interesting, though. They do have an extra year of control on Ronald Acuna. You asked the question, who could be the first half-billion-dollar player? It's not going to be for a few years, but what is Ronald Acuna going to command on the open market if he continues to improve as a player? Whew, man, that kid is going to get paid something handsome, isn't he? A lot to get into. The NCAA tournament underway. Who's going to be playing tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and who is advancing along?
It's got to go!
Atlanta United are back in action.
As they kick off Season 3.
Catch every game here all season long.
Our MLS Cup champion Atlanta United play here.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Morning show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game from the Kia Studios with John and Hugh. Getting ready for the NCAA tournament tonight. Both games in the first four are live on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. North Carolina Central and North Dakota State with a tip at 6:45 tonight. And that will be followed by the late game between Arizona State and St. John's as we complete the final games of the first four. And then, of course, tomorrow at 12:15 is when it all begins. First game up in the it's already begun, but you know what I'm talking about. The big run begins, the field of 64, at 12:15 tomorrow with Minnesota taking on Louisville. That's the first game out of the blocks at 12:15 tomorrow. And so we'll have our first teams live during the tournament. I would say this as well, that it is so amazing because, two teams are already out of the NCAA tournament, but you start with 68, and I go back to this, and Hugh, by Sunday night, there'll be only 52 teams will be eliminated by Sunday night.
Yeah.
Gone.
And that's why, for a lot of people, Thursday, Friday? Like, that's a big weekend.
Yeah.
Like I told you, I have a friend of mine that's having a NCAA tournament party. And, I don't know what the setup's going to be because I'm assuming it has to be more than one television. I know they're a Florida State fan, so I know Florida State's going to be on the TV. But still, It's like as a person that's watching as a fan, I'm trying to watch as many games as I can. I'm trying to get as many updates as I possibly can, and I'm pretty sure whatever channel it's on, they're going to do that. But still, it's one of those things where, yeah, it's a big weekend for a lot of people.
So I dug up some stats. I want to have a little fun with the NCAA tournament March Madness today. One story, I'm going to give you a few, okay? One story in ESPN yesterday ranked all of the 68 coaches by playing experience and how good they were as players during the day, okay? And we'll just tell you, the worst player for a coach, of any coach, is Bruce Pearl, okay? So Bruce Pearl apparently didn't play at all, couldn't play a lick or something like that. He was ranked the worst player of all the coaches at number 68. The best player is playing, or his team is playing tonight, Chris Mullin at St. John's. And then it goes to Johnny Dawkins and Bobby Hurley, and then kind of starts to drop off the face of the earth.
Tremendously.
They're not, as you go down this list, you realize very few of these coaches played basketball.
At any level?
They played high school. They played at some local JUCO. They were on the bench. They weren't star players.
So when I'm looking at this list, you're talking about these are coaches that played in the NBA. Or is this just any basketball experience whatsoever? You're talking about from college to high school.
Yeah, that's is how they ranked them. I mean, I could see, well, Mullen obviously played in the NBA.
Yeah, Johnny, that's what Dawkins, I'm saying. Because I didn't know.
Bobby Hurley.
What, Jim Boeheim played in the NBA?
I don't think so, no.
John Calipari?
Obviously, Lon Kruger, because he played here
for
the Hawks. There may only be four guys that played NBA basketball.
So this is not a fair list. This is not a fair list. Because you're talking about some guys who have played at the pinnacle of their sport and some who probably got into it as an assistant.
Right.
So that's not fair. But you know what's funny, John? I could see somebody clicking onto this website and picking their teams according to the experience of the coach that's coaching the team. I could see that. And trying to measure which team has a better chance because the coach has more experience on the court than the other guy. I can see that.
Definitely. Well, Mike Krzyzewski played for basketball in college. He was a point guard at Army, and his head coach was Bob Knight. And that's how he got into coaching. You know, and Bob Knight took him under his wing. And when Bob Knight got the job at Indiana, he hired his point guard, Mike Krzyzewski, put him on the Indiana bench. And then the next thing was he was off and running.
Yeah, but think about it. Some guys get into it inadvertently, and they didn't know that they were genius coaches. Some guys might have got into it by, you know, waking up and going with your dad, hanging out, hanging around the game. Mm-hmm. Not actually playing the game.
Well, Richard Petito, he didn't play. He hung around his dad.
Yeah.
Hopefully not at an Italian restaurant, but he hung around his dad, okay?
I couldn't leave that one alone.
No, I couldn't.
Way to set it up, though. way to set it up.
Yeah, but it is kind of interesting when you start to go, okay, Chris Mullin, all right, he was a great player at St. John's. If you don't remember, if you're not old enough to remember, Chris Mullin was a great player at St. John's. And a first-team All-American, could really light it up playing in the NBA. Johnny Dawkins was a hell of a guard at Duke. So was Bobby Hurley. Bobby Hurley, even if you didn't like him, and I couldn't stand Bobby Hurley, he was a hell of a player at Duke. And Lon Kruger, when he was at K-State, Lon Kruger was all conference. Lon Kruger could play. But, you know, aside from a 4-5, you know, that's about it. And the rest of them didn't. So I guess it just goes to prove, you know, you don't have to be able to play to be a coach.
Yeah. I mean, but some would lead you to believe that that's the case. I mean, and some people are better at X's and O's than to actually play the game. Because just like you see some great players, when they try to get into coaching, it doesn't really work that way. It's right. Either one or the other. It's really tough.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of, you know, players try to become coaches. I mean, great players try to become coaches in all sports, and it just doesn't really work at times. You know, I mean, Bart Starr is a head coach in the NFL, right? And it didn't really so much work. But great player, obviously, one of the best of all time, just didn't work. You know, maybe that's what Peyton Manning kind of thinking, you know. Do you kind of ruin your legacy a little bit if you go in and you can't coach? But I don't know if that's the case, especially in college, because so much of it's recruiting, and he would do so well in that. But no, that's just kind of an interesting thing. All right, some other interesting facts about March Madness. I'll just run through these. Did you know that since 1986, you could keep the court?
I did not
know
that.
If you win, you get to keep. Forget the nets. You get to keep the whole court.
So you mean to tell me, say, like if they have the Final Four here? Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
The court that they win on, they get to keep that whole thing.
That whole thing. They can break it apart and sell it off to fans, or they could take the whole court and make it their practice court. You know, I don't think you can make it your home court,
mm-hmm.
but I think you can make it your practice court if you want to make it your practice court. You do whatever you want with it. It's your court.
That's pretty cool.
Donate it to a high school. Talk about big games. Some of the things to keep in mind as the tournament begins. The most points ever scored in one game by a team, Loyola Marymount. 1990, 149. That was, for those of you who remember, the great Hank Gathers.
That's what I was thinking. I wasn't sure, though. I remember that. I remember Loyola had a nice run, had a hell of a run.
Most points scored by one player in one game, Austin Carr of Notre Dame. Austin Carr could light it up, but he scored 61 in a game in 1970 for the Irish. So that's a record that stood for now near 50 years, 61 points. Villanova's won two of the last three national titles. Of course, Florida won the last team to win back-to-back titles with that Fab 4 or 5 they had with Al Horford and Joakim Noah and those guys in 2006 and 2007. How about this for a stat, Hugh? The Big Ten. The Big Ten hasn't won a title in nearly 20 years.
Wow. And I would venture the last one to win is Ohio State.
Michigan State.
Michigan
in 2000 State. With Mateen Cleaves in 2000.
Yeah, okay. Michigan State. I do remember that one.
Since Michigan State won it in 2000, 19 years ago, six Big Ten teams have made the title game, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio State, Michigan State, Wisconsin, and Michigan, but they all lost, including last year when Michigan lost the title game. So, yeah, almost 20 years for the Big Ten. If you're thinking about seeds, only once since the field expanded to 64 teams, only once have all four number ones made it to the Final Four. That was in 2008. When number one seeded Kansas, North Carolina, UCLA, and Memphis, all four number one seeds made the Final Four. It's only happened once. But if you're thinking about picking Cinderellas, how about this? Since he expanded to 64 teams, number one seeds have won the tournament 21 times. Number two seeds have won the tournament 5 times. Number three seeds have won it 4 times. Number four seeds have won it once. A fifth seed has never won it. A sixth, a seventh, and an eighth seed have all won it 1 time. So 30 of the 34 titles since they expanded to 64 teams have been the top three seeds.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's a good stat to know because, you know, at least out of all the seedings, that one of them is a good chance that one of the number one seeds is going to make it all the way and has a chance to win it.
Right. 21 times in 34, a number one seed has been national champion. and 30 of the 34 have been by the top seeds, top three seeds.
I think the biggest thing now is just to pick the right seed. Just pick the right number one seed.
How many brackets do you do? Best guess is by people that track this, that 75 million people will do at least one bracket.
At least one.
Mm-hmm. A perfect bracket. The odds of filling out a perfect bracket are 1 in 9.2 quintillion. Okay? To give you an idea of what quintillion is, you have million, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have?
Billion.
Then you have?
What is it?
Trillion.
Trillion, yeah.
Then you have quadrillion.
Quadrillion.
Then you have quintillion.
Yeah, so basically now you probably ain't going to fill out a bracket. You probably ain't going to fill out a perfect bracket.
It's a trillion billion. A trillion billion. It's 9 quintillion, 223 quadrillion, 372 trillion, 36 billion, 854 million. Oh, my God.
Fun facts with John Fricke. That was a fun fact.
I know. I don't even know what a quintillion is. Beats the hell out of me. Coming up top of the hour, Andy Bunker in the house with BMAC. It's all ahead on a very busy Wednesday on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
From Selection Sunday to the Big Dance, we cover it all because the NCAA plays here.
If I had described the playoffs in one word, the word would be precious.
Your home for March Madness is here.
For the win.
Oh! It's our exclusive coverage here. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's been a heck of a fun show today, talking about the Braves, talking about the Falcons and the Dirty Bird, the NCAA tournament, the Atlanta United, a lot of fun stuff that we got into. Now, tomorrow, with Jarvis and Brian going up today to Athens.
Might get some juicy sound.
Yeah, might get some good stuff from those two in regards to Pro Day up at UGA. And I know that the Falcons are going to be up there with Coach Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff looking at these guys because, you know, you got to look at two or three guys. I think that they'll look at more than just two or three guys. Because, you know, a guy like Jonathan Ledbetter, maybe he can drop down in and somebody you could go back to a defensive tackle later in the draft if you like what you see out of Ledbetter. But Nauta's got to show out. Baker's got to show out. Holyfield's got to show out. They have to do better than they did at the combine.
Yeah, and that's going to be – I think that when you look at these picks, more than likely Baker probably be the only one that's going in the first round. All depends on where he goes.
Riley Ridley could be a fringe first-round guy.
Probably late. Late
yeah.
First
oh, yeah.
Round.
Like late. I don't think you know. It's one of those. If the you know.
I don't think where the Falcons are picking, they're going to be looking at him.
Oh no, they're not.
Yeah, definitely
no,
the Falcons are going.
I still think Calvin's probably better than Riley.
So it's going to. But you could do yourself a service by going out there and having a good pro day by move, and you can move up in the ranks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a lot of teams, especially at those key positions, put a lot of emphasis on that 40 time. And the guy that comes to mind immediately is a guy that could probably improve his draft stock is Elijah Holyfield.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that definitely can improve his draft stock if he can run a better 40 time.
He ran 4.76 in Indianapolis. You know, you asked Randy Mack yesterday about – Randy Mack said he ran 4.79 at the combine. And what did you run? You ran
– 4.6.
4.6.
Yeah.
He ran 4.79 at the combine, but then came back to his pro day and ran 4.51.
Yeah, and that probably helped him out tremendously as far as moving him up on the roster. And, you know, what they look for running backs, man, you got to have that breakaway speed. I was talking to somebody on the Twitter feed yesterday, and he was like, 4.8 is slow. And it's when you think about that position, that is a slow time. But you look at Elijah Holyfield on the field, he doesn't look like a 4.8. Not when he's on the field.
Yeah, but isn't it true, Hugh, because I know that this is the case, you know, just from my experience. For example, I would – when I played, you know, even high school basketball, I had a friend of mine or a teammate of mine who was just terrible in practice. And you would – why is he starting – and then you get into games and he'd make everything.
Yeah, that's just how it is for some people.
You know, so some guys don't have necessarily great track speed, but they get into game and they have game speed.
Yeah, and that's what they call it. They call it game speed. But I think for some of the scouts, to make them feel a little bit better, they want him to run a good 40 time. But somebody pointed out to me yesterday, there was a couple guys who really weren't that fast and they were still really good players. Anquan Boldin. was guy. I think he ran a slow time for a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know what he did in the NFL. Terrell Suggs was another guy who ran a slow 40 time.
Mm-hmm.
You see what he's done. He's still playing in the NFL. So
17 years later.
Yeah. So it's some guys that if you got to just find the right team that does not care about that 40 time that you're running to take a chance on you. I think that's the biggest thing for Elijah Holyfield if he does not run a good time today.
Well, the one thing that intrigues me about Holyfield is that he did do 26 reps at 225. We mentioned this yesterday. Being that strong, you know, if you want to run a different style of a power running game and get those two big guys that you just picked up on the offensive line, Brown and Carpenter, to push the pile and you want to go forward, not, you know, kind of sideways and trying to do the old style running, whatever Dirt Cutter wants to do, it'd be interesting to see what kind of a running back he does bring in. Do they draft one? Are they comfortable with the three guys they have that they can just bring in a veteran who can do his style, like a Doug Martin, who, you know, he knows Doug Martin, obviously, from his days in Tampa. So, you know, I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see what they do with that position. But, again, that'll be the pro day at Georgia today. So whatever sound they gather, Brian and Jarvis, and bring back, we'll be chopping that up tomorrow and talking about it. I think you told me the auto show starts this week?
Yeah, the auto show, I think, starts tomorrow. And that's something that, you know, me and my son, we usually do. We haven't done it in a while because obviously he's gotten a little older. But, you know, now since he has his learner's permit, you know, I think it'll be kind of fun to go down there and just kind of look at the autos, the new cars that are coming out.
You know, I went to one auto show one time, and I've been to the RV show here like, I don't know, three or four times.
Yeah, you serious about that RV one day, huh?
Yeah.
You know, that RV camper thing going.
You know, here's my problem with going to them. All I get, especially, and I get it a little bit at the auto show, but I really get it
lust.
At the RV. I get the wants.
Yeah, I get that all the time, too.
It's like going to a strip joint, you know what I mean?
I don't know about that. I ain't been in a strip joint in a long time, John. But I like that analogy that you tied it to the strip club like that. Haven't been to one of those in a long time. Yeah.
Get you the wants.
Haven't been to one of those in a long time. Yeah. But my problem is this. I'm a muscle car guy, and it's always something that you see at the auto show along the lines of the muscle car that you always – want to get. The sad part about going to the auto show is that no matter what you have as a guy, you're going to always see something else that you want, especially if you're in the horsepower. It all depends on what type of vehicle you're into. If you're into a truck or whatever, it's going to always be something there that's better than what you already have, and you just got to tell yourself, hey man, I'm happy with what I have. And I think most guys don't have that problem because they're already in a committed relationship. Like I kind of look at having cars as like being in a committed relationship, because that's, like, to be totally honest, probably the only committed relationship that I have. And it's like, you know, when you get one that you like, you got to kind of stick with it for a little while.
What, D?
What you mean? Why comparing the cars to a committed relationship?
What? Yes, brother.
No, but
what, I mean,
most guys
are you
call
leasing,
their,
are you leasing a girlfriend now? Is that what you're doing?
No, but most guys call
I'm not
their
in
cars
the market.
Female names. Am I lying? Most guys call their car female names. So, in a sense, it is like being in a relationship with your vehicle.
Wait, do girls call their cars guy names?
I do not know.
I've heard some girls lady that does.
I've heard some girls do that, but most guys call their cars girls' names, and it's like a relationship that they have, because you know you have some people that have had cars for years, and you could tell because their cars are immaculate, like whatever they get. I was Garrison Hurst has I think it's a '69 Chevelle. That he's had forever. And every time I see him, we're always talking about cars. And he's talking about how long he's had it and what he's done to it and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how it is. It's kind of like a long-term relationship.
Yeah, because I get the wants for a new car about every 4 years. I get like, okay, I love my car. I mean, you've been through a lot, you know, and I don't name them, but I, you know, you pat him on the hood and say, you've been through a lot, you got me through stuff, but
When is the trade-in for you? At what point do you trade them in?
Like every 4 years I get the wants.
Okay, so that's what, but yeah. Probably 50,000-60,000 miles for you.
Oh dude, you know where I live? Probably closer to 100.
Yeah, that's probably right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But see, with a truck,
I do about 25,000 a year.
See, with a truck, you ain't gotta worry about the mileage, really, I don't think, on the truck, because they're built for that. So you know, I plan on keeping Tookie for a long time. We're gonna be together for a while.
Oh, Tookie?
Yeah,
my Tucson?
The truck. My Tookie the truck. That's the name of my truck.
And is that for Tookie Tucson?
Oh, of no. course. Tookie Tucson, John. I just sat here and did this whole diatribe about how
guys. Oh, it's women.
Yes. And you going the first name come out your mouth is Tookie Tucson.
Okay.
And I talked about relationships and all this other stuff. You talk about no.
Okay.
No. Not at all. Not at all. No.
Okay. I just check it.
Mm-mm. Uh-huh. But yeah, we're gonna go because at some point he's gonna start driving and I need to make sure that he gets to where he needs to be, because he just got his permit. And for whatever reason, I always ask him to come driving with me. He never wants to go.
All right, so you go to the auto show, you get the wants. You can have any car in the world. You would want what? We're going to give you a car, any car in the world. You're going to get, I mean, just what would you, you can get any car in the world.
I don't know. It'd probably be a Dodge product. I'd probably get a Trackhawk. I really, really want a Trackhawk, but I don't have Trackhawk money. I would really want a Trackhawk. I know everybody's looking at me like they don't know. It's a Jeep Cherokee that has 707 horsepower. It can flat out fly.
I do like the Raptor, I have to say.
Raptor's nice.
But that Land Rover.
See, you're more about that luxury. I'm more about that horsepower.
That Land Rover. Yeah. Top of the hour, Andy Bunker and B-Mac. Hey, Bunk and B-Mac. It's a little Bunker mentality action in the middle of the day on Sports Radio 90, Time of the Game.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.